Light takes you on a journey. A journey where you'll explore the nuances of energy. You'll visit the angelic realms and study the ancient wisdom and teachings of spirituality. We want you to reach within and discover the magnificent being that you came here to be. We help shine God's divine healing light by bringing love, light, and blessings into your world. And now, here is the host of Healing Light, Terry Van Horn.
Hi, welcome to Healing Light. This is Terry Van Horn, and just want to thank you so much for being here with us today. Today we're going to talk about a subject that's come up a lot on my Facebook page, because I did a live video the other day, which was a marginal disaster because I didn't know what I was doing. But I had so many people ask me questions about their loved ones on the other side and what it was like over there and if they were happy. So I thought, you know, I need to talk about that. And I need to, you know, share some information with you about what things are like on the other side. Because, you know, I don't want anyone to ever fear this. I want you to anticipate it with excitement and joy like I do. Now, I'm going to tell you a couple of minutes worth of family background for me, because I think you need to understand kind of like where I came from to where I am today. I mean, I am an award-winning black sheep of my family. My dad's family, his mom and dad were very, very, very strict Southeast Texas Southern Baptist. Daddy's family was so strict that he could not play games, because games would include things like cards and dice. And that obviously was gambling in the world of Southern Baptist. But Daddy came out of that pretty much unscathed. And even though he continued with being a Baptist, he became what I referred to as a realistic Baptist. You know, he actually was out in the real world because he spent much of his life in the police department. His mom was wonderful, did tons and tons of mission work. She did all sorts of things. And I think she lightened up a whole lot as she got older. Now, my mom's family was one of those that's all about keeping up pretenses. My mom's parents were split. In any other terms, you would say divorced, but divorce is such a bad thing back then that they were legally separated. So my mom and her brother were raised by my grandmother, who was also heavily involved in the Southern Baptist Church. And they did some things, but it was really more about kind of getting attention. Because as my mom grew older, she was heavily involved in the church. I mean, like, she really and truly does probably still have keys to the church. And she was there all the time. But it was always doing volunteer work and doing things for personal recognition. So it definitely taught me how to not do things. My dad was marginally involved in the church, but because of his work schedule, he wasn't there a lot. But this was a hardcore fire and brimstone Southern Baptist church that I grew up in. So, I mean, from the very beginning, I guess, even though I was this little girl asking questions in a really a very innocent and wanting to understand way, I mean, I really wasn't trying to be a brat, but I would ask questions and keep people really confused and very uncomfortable. So fast forward to the 1980s, there were some books that came out. There was this woman, this crazy woman named Betty Eady, and she wrote a book about what was called Life After Death. This woman said that she had died on the operating table and she had seen what it was like on the other side. Well, I was heavily into my own spiritual experimentation and journey by that time. So obviously I grabbed her book immediately and started reading it. And, you know, at this time, we're talking about probably 82 or 83, something like that, whenever I got her book and started reading it. And I found it fascinating. Now, I could have these conversations with my dad. We could talk about this kind of stuff. My mom would freak her out, you know, because that's not the way it was, you know. I mean, these people were so hardcore Southern Baptists that you didn't even talk to angels, because angels were just some kind of decoration in your Bible. It wasn't actually an entity that was here to help you. But Daddy and I could talk about this stuff. And he was fascinated with it, too. So a lot of times if Mom was gone, we'd kind of hang out and talk about, you know, what would be considered to be weird stuff. But it was great, and I loved being able to discuss this with him. Now, I also studied a lot from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Now, this woman was groundbreaking with hospice and helping people as they're going through the dying process. Now, I don't want you to think that I was obsessed with dying, because that's not the case. Even though I'd had a couple of little sort of near-death experiences, or really not near-death experiences, but I had situations where I could have very easily died, I wasn't obsessed with it. But I can tell you that growing up as a child in one of those fire and brimstone Southern Baptist churches, not only was I afraid to sit in the pew and move or do anything during Sunday church, but I was afraid to go to sleep a lot of times as a kid. And I was quiet and shy. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I was a perfect kid, but I was pretty darn good. You know, I, you know, made good grades in school, read a lot. I was really pretty quiet. But at the same time, they had me terrified of being able to go to sleep at night because, you know, all these bad things were going to happen. You know, devils and fire and all these other sorts of things. So as I got older and started learning about things, you know, my opinion started changing a lot, because I did reject a lot of what I was taught with all that sort of stuff. And so Dad and I would hang out and talk about all these different things and talk about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work and the things that she did with people who were dying, because it really kind of blended in with the information that Betty Eady was given. You know, Betty Eady was telling us, you know, she died, she went to heaven, there was this beautiful bright light, there were all of these angels, it was like so loving and so wonderful and so comfortable, and it was just fantastic. And then she came back, they brought her back on the operating table, and she felt that her mission was to tell people what things were like on the other side. Now, several years later, I had the opportunity to hear her speak and to meet her, and she's really an awesome lady and definitely very genuine. But at the time, for her to even, you know, talk about life after death, that was a, boy, only crazy people do this stuff like that, you know? They didn't, nobody believed in it. And she was really labeled, she had a tough road. And which makes me admire her so much more for what she did. But these conversations with my dad were really important for me for a lot of reasons. One, it was, you know, just a continuation of our bonding, because we were both very, very close to each other. But secondly, it came in very handy because a few years later, Daddy developed cancer. He worked in a steel mill for most of his life, and he ended up with lung cancer, and then it went to his liver, and then it went to his brain. I ended up losing him when I was 28 years old. But during the whole process, not only did we become closer, but you know, we talked about this stuff even more then, because, you know, now it's a little bit more relevant. He was never, not that the doctor said he was never going to die, but he was never in any imminent danger of dying. You know, they were, everything was always manageable, treatable, and it wasn't, you know, too terribly bad. Except that all of a sudden, one day, he went in for a checkup, and they told my parents, who, and my parents were not big on questioning or interrogating doctors, but the doctors told them that he had probably about 2 to 3 years because the cancer had moved to his brain. My mom called me at work, and I immediately resigned my job. This was on a Wednesday, and I told them that Friday was going to be my last day, and I was going to stay home with my 18-month-old daughter and help take care of my dad. And that's what I was going to do for the rest of my life. Unfortunately, Daddy died 3 days later. And that was the biggest beginning of my spiritual journey. When we get back, we're going to talk about what happened and how he changed my life.
Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello! Join us, Lisa Berry and Michelle Carter, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for the Mindset Makeover, What's Possible? Get ready to become present, clear, and unstuck, and start living fully, led by your heart, while you listen and feel this transformation through vibration of word, sound, and song. You'll open up to what's possible and experience your shift.
There is no death, only a change of worlds. Chief Seattle. Deborah Livingston is an award-winning intuitive psychic medium whose international services include mediumship, spiritual assessment, animal communication, and spiritual mentoring. She is a published author and a trained shaman. Deborah provides evidential messages from spirit and departed loved ones. Learn more at devlivemedium.com. That's D-E-B-L-I-V medium.com.
Want to know some fun facts about colonoscopies? Colon cancer is 90% preventable. A colonoscopy can detect and prevent colon cancer in one fell swoop. But here's a not-so-fun fact. Lots of people are so uncomfortable even talking about a colonoscopy that they never get one. If you're 50 or 45 for African Americans, get screened now. Maybe even earlier if you have a family history. To schedule a screening today, visit StopColonCancerNow.com.
This is Terry Van Horn, and you're listening to Healing Light. So I'm talking about when my dad died. I was 28. I'd been married for almost 2 years. I had a daughter who was almost 18 months old. And my dad was only 56. Now, he and I had been talking about a lot of life after death kind of stuff and mystical experiences. And at the time, I was still really pretty blocked intuitively because I had shut everything down. I'd been highly intuitive as a child, and it terrified me. So I shut it all down. But the night that my dad died changed all of that. Now, to be honest, I was very relieved that he was no longer going to be in pain. He wasn't going to go through the, you know, devastating side effects of brain cancer. So from that standpoint, I was happy his death was also beautiful. We were all there, all with him, couple of deep breaths, and that was it. You know, wasn't anything traumatic, you know, no drama, none of that. It was all very easy. I'd gone home, and my mother-in-law had my daughter. Husband and I come home, naturally, as a man. He went to sleep immediately. And I'm laying in bed, and actually, I was at peace. I was really okay, you know? My dad was my best friend, but I was at peace because I didn't want him to suffer. Well, as I'm dozing off, there is a light up in the corner of my room, you know, at the ceiling. And I heard my dad's voice as clear as day telling me the words, "It's just like they said it was." That turned things around for me because I knew exactly what Daddy was talking about. I knew that he was talking about everything that we had been discussing and learning about Betty Eddy, about how beautiful and loving and wonderful it was on the other side. So that was actually the beginning of my opening up, even though I didn't totally open up for probably about another 15, 20 years. But that was kind of the indication that it was okay to open up again. And I didn't hear from Daddy again for a very long time. But he's kind of the John Wayne type. And, you know, kind of quiet, but when he says something, then you listen. So after that, I had the chance to meet Betty Eddy, continued with my spirituality and my learning. And then fast forward, I had a couple of really nasty experiences. A really bad car wreck where someone rear-ended me. I had a Category 4 tornado come over my house when I was stranded outside the front door. I've had some stuff happen. But I always felt him with his arms around me and protecting me. They do that, you know. They can still do that from the other side. And a lot of times it was thanks, Dad, and thanks, God. Yeah, usually Daddy got top billing, but, you know, I'm biased. I was Daddy's girl. So, you know, as I went through life and continued to grow and continued to learn with things, other things started happening. Now, you have to remember that my mom is still in that whole church lady mode. Okay? She's going to go and volunteer every minute of her time so that she can get all sorts of recognition and little plaques. And, you know, that's her thing. But when it was time for her own mother to die, my maternal grandmother was not the most loving and affectionate person. She was very bitter, very judgmental. And she made it very clear that my two cousins were her favorite grandchildren. Now, I loved my two cousins, and I wasn't as crazy about her, but I did really love and adore my dad's mom. So I was okay with it. Wasn't a big deal for me. But my mom called one day, and I was at work, and she said, "This is it. She's in the hospital. She's really dying." And because I'd had, like, numerous phone calls over a period of months, even though we all lived in the same immediate area. But yeah, I was constantly getting these phone calls about, you know, like, this is it. But finally got one, and it's like, this is really it. So I go over, and my mom and my uncle are both kind of a wreck. And I start talking to my grandmother. Now, she's telling me she's tired. She's ready to go. She's telling me that she sees her brothers and sisters. I think she had like 10 or 11 of them. And you know, she's like, "Well, I see Libby, or I see, you know, this one or that one." And I kept telling her, you know, just go with her. It's okay. You know, just go. And she'd be there, and she'd just lay there with her eyes closed. And then all of a sudden, those eyes would pop wide open. And with all the energy, and, you know, I got to say, a little bit of venom, she would say things like, well, what do you know about this? And I'd tell her, I said, I know enough that you need to go back over behind that curtain with your sister, and everything's going to be okay. And I talked her through it the way that I had learned from Betty Eady, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and experience by that point. This went on for over 2 hours. My mother thought I needed to be put in a straitjacket because of the things that I was saying to my grandmother. But fortunately, a family friend was the head of nursing at that hospital and pulled my mom aside and said, leave her alone. She knows what she's doing. She's helping your mom. So my grandmother would keep laying there. I'm so tired. I'm really ready to go. I'm ready to go. Deep sighs, eyes closed, and you're thinking, this is it, you know, any second now. Not that I was rushing it, but, you know, you're preparing. And then her eyes would pop open again, and she said, I'm afraid I'm going to hell. Now, I wasn't going to get in a philosophical discussion with my grandmother, literally on her deathbed, but I don't necessarily believe in hell. But being a hardcore Southern Baptist, she did. And so I kept telling her, no, no, you're not going to hell. And, you know, these things, you know, everything's going to be okay. But this woman was so terrified of going to hell. We had to call in a preacher. We had to have multiple prayers there. I mean, she was literally staying alive because she was afraid she was going to hell. And, you know, it was just, it amazed me. Now, I went on for probably about another hour. So by this point, I've been there at least 3 hours. And I had to leave because I had to pick up my daughter from daycare. So I had to leave. But about 20 minutes after I left the room, my grandmother went into a coma, which I believe she was still so afraid of crossing over and going to hell that she couldn't let go. She could not release that whole experience. And let me tell you, that when she was laying in that bed, you know, with the big sighs and saying, okay, this is it, I'm going, she'd wake up, she had to have her hair brushed, she had to have perfume on, she had to instruct my mom and uncle again about not to fight over her stuff, which her stuff had already been divided up anyway, because, you know, she was living in a house where my parents had furnished it. But she kept finding excuses to not release and to let go and to go on with the whole process. She was so afraid of crossing over and what was going to happen to her that she fought it every step of the way and kept her body in a coma for, I think, about 3 days after that. And it was amazing to watch that whole process and obviously to be a part of it, but to see the fear of someone who had been indoctrinated their entire lives on the concept of hell. And I realized that, you know, in the entire time that I'd been growing up and going to church, yeah, they talked about with heaven having the streets of gold. But they really want to talk about hell a lot. You know, there's like so much fire, there's brimstone, there's, you know, the gnashing teeth and the wailing. And I mean, you could just pull out hours worth of sermons on hell, but not much of anything for heaven. You get a mansion, streets are lined with gold. That's about it. And I started thinking, you know, Betty Eady has seen this. She knows what it's like to cross over. My own father came to me clear as day to remind me and let me know that everything was like that, that everything was beautiful and wonderful. And I thought, you know, it's so sad that people are this afraid of what's on the other side. So a lot of times whenever I do talk to people and, you know, they get a chance to ask questions about anything, I'm always asked questions about what's going on with my loved one? Are they okay? Are they happy? Are they safe? And so I thought, you know, I really do need to get more information out there to help other people. Now, I met a wonderful, adorable lady who is the most authentic person on the planet. Her name is Anita Morjani. It's Morjani. Anita is the real deal. She wrote a book called Dying to Be Me. And Anita tells about the most extraordinary experience of dying that you have ever read or ever heard about. She also has medical documentation of spontaneous healing and remission from, you know, like the worst cancer is stage 4. Well, her organs were shutting down. She was like at a stage 6. She was way beyond stage 4. Okay. She should have been dead long ago. But she came back to share a message about how beautiful it is on the other side. So when we get back, we're going to talk about how amazing it is on the other side. Because I've been there a few times myself, too. We'll be back in a minute.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
People are always looking to invest in a good opportunity. So what if you could invest in the future of kids, like a stock? Not the kind of stock that's about making money, but a stock for social change called Better Futures. With your investment, it helps students like me go to college. My name is Charles, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Healing Light. This is Terry Van Horn. And so, you know, these are kind of my experiences with people who were kind of going through the whole dying process. I was not able to be with my dad's mom, the one that I was really close to, or the grandparent that I was really close to, whenever she died, because she literally died the night before, actually a few hours before my mom's mother's memorial service. And so my uncles didn't want to call because they knew that I had just lost my house in the tornado, just lost my mom's mother, and now I was losing my dad's mother. And all that happened to me within, I think, 10 days. So it was a little kind of a busy month for me. But, you know, the thing about it is that when we die, it is no different from walking from one room of the house to the other. Now, you know, if you're in the living room and you walk from the living room to the kitchen, now you are no longer on that plane of existence in the living room. You're in a new area. You're in a new space. And that's kind of what it's like. You know, we're just changing dimensions. People who cross over, do not necessarily change their personality. I mean, they're really kind of the same person, but at the same time, there's a difference because now they see things in a completely different way. They see things unconditional love. So when Anita died, I'll tell you a little bit about her story, but I always recommend that people get her book because it is an amazing book. It's only like a couple hundred pages. So you can kind of sit down and just whip right through it. Actually, I kind of went through the, kind of skipped over the preliminaries about her family and all that and went right into the meat of it, but amazing book. What happened to Anita was she started, she was to the point where she was skin and bones. She was in a wheelchair. She couldn't do anything. She started failing, and her husband took her to the closest hospital, which was not her hospital, you know, and her doctor's. While she was there, everything to her started getting a little kind of fuzzy, a little surreal, kind of dreamlike. She felt like she was becoming unconscious to a point. And by the time she got to the hospital, she actually was in a coma. And, you know, doctors didn't think there was really much hope because she really was wasted away with cancer. Now, as she went through the whole process, they were trying to save her. They were trying to do all these different things. She was having organ failure one at a time. Her heart remained beating, but everything else pretty much shut down on her and was dying. So her mom was there and her husband was there, and they were talking to this new doctor. They're calling her brother and getting him to come. I think he was in India. And they're just like, get on the plane. Anita's dying. Anita's dad had already passed. But they had all of these doctors who didn't really know her, but they were working on her, and they were doing their best to save her. But the thing was, Anita saw and heard everything. Everything. She may have been in a coma, but she knew exactly everything that was going on. She was able to be in the hallway with her husband and her mom and her doctor and hear what the doctor had to say. Then she'd zip over to the plane where her brother was, and she would try to comfort her brother as he's on, you know, this extended plane, this extended flight, trying to get to her in time. She would, she saw when they were taking her in and out of MRIs and all the things that they had to do with that. You know, she saw the whole process. She saw it all. And she was aware of everything. So right there, it tells you, okay, somebody's in a coma. Don't be doing all of this, you know, sad, whiny stuff when you're with them. Don't be talking about them or saying anything that you don't want them to hear. Be very positive, be very upbeat when someone is in a coma. My daughter was in a coma when she was 13, and I would not allow anyone in the room, except for doctors, of course, who couldn't talk about the future and what we were going to do and what she was going to do. If you couldn't talk about that, you couldn't be in my kid's room. And she ended up being just fine and now is running around chasing a two-year-old. But Anita talks about how she didn't feel like she had gone anywhere, but yet she was able to pop around and see everybody and hear these conversations. Then all of a sudden she was aware of her dad's presence. Now, she and her dad had not been on the greatest of terms because being a traditional Indian family, Daddy had the arranged marriage and she didn't want to go for it. And she turned down the arranged marriage and basically bailed out on that wedding. And so that was kind of embarrassing to the parents and, you know, very traditional dad. But she the ultimate thing is that she found the love of her life later on, but that was after her father had died. Now, she also experienced the presence of her best friend who had died of cancer a few years before. So everybody was there, and they were with her. But she's still kind of connecting with everybody in the hospital. So when she was there, all of her senses were just, like, so heightened, it was so unbelievable, that everything was just really intense, you know? Her vision was 360 degrees. She could see everything. She could hear everything. She could smell and sense everything. And also, same thing with Betty Eady, time, a lot of stuff can happen, and you feel like it's been a lot of time. Now, when Anita was, you know, in this afterlife period, because they had all but pronounced her dead at this point, she started getting an awareness of things making sense and things coming together for her so that she was understanding life a lot more. You know, she understood why she had cancer. She understood, you know, things with her dad and with her family. She understood relationships that she had with people when she was growing up. You know, kids that may have been bullying her or, you know, whatever. There were still connections with these people. But basically, she felt a sense of unconditional love and compassion unlike anything that you could possibly feel here on Earth. Totally not the same. Now, she also, you know, understood more about her relationship with her husband and how they were entwined. But every single thing with her was just intensified, but particularly the love. And you know that feeling whenever you curl up with your favorite blanket in a book or a movie and, you know, like your favorite indulgence, like ice cream or popcorn or whatever, and you're like so warm and cozy and comfortable and you don't ever want to move? Well, it's like that, but compounded. It's that, it's so much more. And she felt how there was just unconditional love, and there's none of this judgment. There's all forgiveness and love. There's nothing else to it. Now, one of the really cool things that she said was that she told her dad that she felt like she was home because it was just so beautiful and loving and wonderful. And her dad reminded her that you're always home. You are always there, and you will always be there. You have to allow yourself to be in that presence. Now, I thought that that was really a big deal. Now, when, you know, she and her dad had conversations and stuff, and then her daddy told her she had to go back. She couldn't stay. And she started feeling, you know, like she was beginning to come back. She was a little heavier and things like that. And then she comes back into her body. Now, when she does, she really messes with everybody. And this is the part that I love about it, because when she came back, the doctor walked in. This is a man she'd never seen before in her life. And she called him by name. She told people about the conversations that they had while she was in a coma in another room. She told her brother and described what was going on with him when he was on the airplane trying to get to her. You know, she was there just to tell everybody everything, because she had eventually been declared dead. And everybody was distraught. Everybody was upset. But she knew that she was still alive, very much alive. And So she was just able to come back into her body because part of her mission was to let people know what a beautiful experience it is on the other side and that everything, everything, everything is about love. You know, that's the most important thing. People are so afraid of hell. Guess what? There's not anything like that. But, you know, the thing that Anita took from this was that, and this is a quote from her. She says, "Now that you know the truth of who you really are, go back and live your life fearlessly." She was getting that message from her dad and her best friend. They were, you know, sending her that message when she came back. So she was able to call doctors and nurses by name. She was able to tell everybody what happened while she was in a coma. And she told the doctor that night she wanted a steak. And the doctor's like, "You can't do that." Well, guess what? She had steak that night. She did everything that she wanted to do. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Anita's journey, and we're going to talk about my own, because I've been over a few times before myself. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes to talk about how amazing it is on the other side.
Free your mind. Expand your soul. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
Hi, this is Tony Bennett, and I'm a volunteer for LifeBeat. The music industry fights AIDS. We all know that there are some new medications for people with AIDS, but there is still no cure. This is why I personally volunteer for LifeBeat. The AIDS crisis is not over, and people need help. Volunteer for your local AIDS organization. They need you.
This is Healing Light, and this is Terry Van Horn, and we're talking about what life is like on the other side. Now, I've been telling you a little bit about Anita Morjani's journey and her amazing book, but the thing that was so cool about Anita is that here she was, she had all of her organs fail, she had totally eaten up with cancer, she was declared dead, now she came back, was eating steak that night after she woke up. And within a few weeks, they were doing additional testing and the cancer and everything was gone. All the damage was gone. And she told the doctor as soon as she woke up, she knew she was going to be okay and that she knew she was going to be fine. So obviously the medical team wanted to baby her because, you know, who wouldn't? And she was like, no. And this woman's a powerhouse. She travels all over the world now, telling her story and sharing about the amazing unconditional love that's on the other side. Now, I've gone over a couple of times, I have been over about 2 years ago, I did, and that was not voluntary. It was a procedure. I've talked about it a couple of times where I was under anesthesia. I was getting injections in my back, but my sinus drainage was so severe during that time that when they rolled me back over, I started choking. And choked so much that my vocal cord swelled and shut off all my oxygen. But fortunately, my doctor is amazing. I was in a full ER and not in some clinic. Always do a full, not ER, but OR. Always be in a full operating room, no matter what you do. And so they fixed me. Tore up my throat, couldn't talk for weeks, but hey, I was still alive. But when I was there, I was on the other side. And I wanted, it was so funny because I kept saying, just five more minutes, just five more minutes. I was with my angels and guides, one of my primary guides. And it was beautiful. It was wonderful. I knew from the very beginning I was coming back. I knew I wasn't staying. So there wasn't any of this discussion about, you know, you have to go back kind of thing. I knew it was coming right back. But I just wanted a few more minutes here and there to get more information and to learn more, which is pretty typical of me. Now, I have also voluntarily gone over a couple of times in helping other people cross over who were terrified of it, but who needed to cross over because they were so sick. And they were just like hanging on and hanging on. So I went over with them. And whenever I do that, it's kind of like going through this big tunnel down this bridge and, you know, holding hands, doing it together. And then I get to the other side and, you know, say, okay, you know, the worst is over and, you know, here you go. I don't recommend that people do that because, you know, you could get caught up in staying. Are going all the way. But in my case, I did it with the full intention of getting to, you know, getting my toes up to that line again and coming right back. Now, I am absolutely not afraid of dying. Not at all. Not that I am pushing it or rushing it, but it is an amazing, beautiful experience. Now, when someone dies, you know, this is a huge question that I get is like, okay, what happens? Well, they do go through that whole crossing over thing. They're usually met by loved ones and they're met by angels. They can be met by animals. They can be met by people. They can be met by anybody. And, you know, I figure whenever it's my turn, I'll have, you know, like this enormous herd of animals waiting on me that people won't even have a chance to get through that. But what happens is we go through that and we're kind of in not necessarily a limbo state, but we're not all the way over there. We stick around for about a week or so to be with loved ones and to help them through the whole grieving process. It helps us kind of get acclimated or helps them get acclimated to the fact that, you know, okay, I'm over there. But at the same time, they're able to really help loved ones. And then they go away. They end up completely crossing over and they go through what I kind of refer to as kind of like Heaven University. Now, this is where they are doing not really a judgmental life review. This is a loving life review about how you did on that whole divine purpose thing whenever you started out. So we started out with a game plan. We forgot it as soon as we were born, and then we had to struggle to get back to it. So that is part of kind of the life review is how you did with that. It's not necessarily saying that, you know, when you were 7 years old, you pulled somebody's hair or you punched somebody. You know, it's not like that because we're not being judgmental. There is no judgment, no fear, no anger, nothing. You don't even have to worry about forgiveness. That doesn't mean people treat people bad now. But on the other side, that's not a big deal. Now, after your loved one goes through that process, it's usually about 3 or 4 months our time. Sometimes it can go a little bit longer. But they're healing from all of their wounds and scars here on Earth, as well as doing that life review, kind of getting their act together, getting really acclimated to life in spirit form again. You know, because we keep going back and forth. It's kind of like messes with us. Once we figure out the Earth thing, then we got to go back and, you know, figure out that thing. Generally, from the best that I can understand, the information that I've been given is that a human soul will wait sometimes like a couple hundred years before it comes back. Now, that is not a hard and fast rule. They can come back sooner. It is their choice. But usually they wait. Sometimes they may even go off, you know, to another dimension, another realm, maybe even another planet. I have been able to see that kind of limbo place that you go to between lives, and it's really pretty cool. But it's beautiful and it's peaceful, and it's so comforting and loving that I can't even imagine volunteering to leave it. But once your loved one gets out of that whole educational part, then they're able to really come back and to connect with you. So most mediums will not try to contact someone who has crossed over unless they've been gone for at least 3 to 4 months, because it's easier to connect with them then. And then we're able to talk to your loved one 9 times out of 10. Sometimes people are a little hesitant. They don't really want to, like, communicate because they're still kind of getting their feet on the ground. But that's about how long it takes. Now, if it was something really traumatic, if it was something that was like suicidal or a murder, something like that, a lot of times they have to go through additional healing. So it takes a little bit longer. Also, if they've gone through a really prolonged, horrible, traumatic illness, that takes longer too. But after that, they are here. They are not your angels, okay? They are still a soul that has human qualities. So they cannot be your angel. That's two different entities completely. But they can be here to help you. They do not have that universal wisdom that an angel has. But they do know the ropes down here, and they know the ropes in this lifetime because they've been here in this lifetime. Obviously, things are a little different now than they were in the Middle Ages. So, you know, somebody dies during this time period, during our lifetime, then they can help us in different ways that maybe the angels can't, or, you know, another loved one can't. But they can help us. My dad has protected me many different times. And they will let you know that they are here. Ask them. They can hear you whenever you're talking to them. And if you listen very quietly, you can hear them. But I tell you, if somebody in life, like my dad, was very quiet, it's going to be like pulling teeth to get information from them. I have a friend who lost a son. We did a program a couple of weeks ago. He was 12 years old and a totally outrageous kid. You know, he was always like fun. He was not bad. I mean, he was just like outrageous fun, really, really outgoing. Well, he pops in all the time. And, you know, the first thing that I got from him was like, my gosh, this kid, he's hilarious. He's a handful. You know, he's a real character. And she said, yeah, that's exactly what he was like. So they do maintain a lot of those personality traits, but it cuts out the negative part. So if someone, say, had problems with drugs or alcohol and they crossed over, now that they're on the other side, they don't have those things that were causing them the problems and the pain. So that means that they are not that kind of negative person that they would have been when they were here. So, you know, it's wonderful being able to connect with people on the other side. You will be able to do that with your loved ones. And if you can't, you can always find somebody like me. You can find me at healinglightonline.com, or you can find me on Facebook, keywords Healing Light. I wish you much love, light, and many, many blessings. Namaste.